You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. This is Bob Gilligan, the current director of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and we're here this morning to talk about some public policy issues affecting the church throughout the state of Illinois. And with me this morning, we are honored to have the past director of the Catholic Conference. So there should be a joke about what happens when you have two Catholic Conference directors in one room or on one radio show.
How many Catholic Conference directors does it take to run a radio show?
I think the answer is going to be clearly more than two.
Pleased to be here with you.
As Jimmy Legault, who I think many people know as the Chancellor of the Archdiocese of Chicago, and he's going to be joining me today as my co-host to talk a little bit about, we're probably the only show in Chicago that's not leading off with the Bears related story here, but we'll mention that briefly and move on to our subject matter, which is another big event that's going on in Washington, D.C., and actually yesterday I think there was some marches and some activity throughout the Archdiocese and throughout the country with relating to the March for Life that's currently going on this morning. It's January 22nd, as our calendar indicates, and I believe it's now the 34th anniversary, and that's probably a bad word in terms of anniversary, connotating something positive. Maybe it's a little bit of we should think of another word, but the March for Life is just calling to remind us all that 34 years ago, I believe it was, the Supreme Court decided the infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which has led, obviously, to the termination of millions of lives and throughout the country. And it's part of our moral and social obligation to make sure that that doesn't happen in the future. And we're articulating public policies that would try to promote the creation of public life as opposed to terminating it. And with us this morning, we have a number of guests that we're going to be trying to weave in and out of the conversation. And we also will mention the phone number at this point in time. The area code is 312-751-1979. So what we're going to be talking about today is a little bit on the judicial implications of the Roe v. Wade case. And we have an honored guest, Mr. Tom Brekka, who is the president and chief counsel of the Thomas More Society. Later in the show, we're going to be joined by Richard Dorflinger, who is the director or co-director of the pro-life department for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And I believe also we're going to have on the line for a brief period of time Mary Louise Curry, who many of our listeners know, who is the director of the Archdiocesan Pro-Life Department. And she is actually in Washington today with busloads of people, I'm told, that are going to be taking to the streets to make our point known about the support for life. I want to, at this point in time, probably bring in our first guest, which is Tom Brekka, who I would imagine many of our listeners probably know. Tom has been very active in pro-life issues throughout his entire career. He is a graduate of St. Philip Neri Parish. He went to Mount Carmel. He went to Notre Dame. We won't try to hold that against him, but we'll try to bear with Tom as best we can, that Notre Dame connection. He's been a special prosecutor. I believe he's represented some various numbers of people. He's probably best known to many of our listeners here as the attorney who represented Joe Shidler in the case Now versus Shidler, the case that I believe was just recently decided. It's been probably about 15 years through the legal process, and he's been involved with many other issues pertaining to the defense of human life. Tom, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am, Bob. Good morning.
Tom,
good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning, Bob. Tom.
Tom, did you have a good weekend?
Well, it's we're having one heck of a weekend here, Bob. Congratulations to Virginia McCaskey and the Bears, for starters. And, of course, here in Washington, there's so much activity going on in connection with the March for Life. It's not only a march, but it's a convention, and a lot of exhibitors, a lot of people from all over the country come. And it's really, and of course, last night, a wonderful mass kind of celebrated by all kinds of priests and members of the clergy and the episcopate from around the country.
Tom, we want to probably start our conversation this morning with you in terms of the Roe v. Wade case. There's been a lot said about it and a lot of implications that have come on in the following years. But there's also cases out there, the Doe versus Bolton case, that was probably turned out to be somewhat more pragmatic as we went into the future here. Talk a little bit about Roe v. Wade, what the case was, and Doe v. Bolton.
Sure, Bob. the Roe v. Wade was the case in which the Supreme Court, back in 1973, after a re-arguing of the case, it really was first up in the court the term before, in 1972, but held over because there were two vacancies on the court, and when those vacancies were filled, it was re-argued, and it involved a constitutional challenge to the Texas abortion law, which, as did so many other laws in the states back then, outlawed abortion except when necessary to preserve the life of the mother. And this was held in a very controversial opinion to be a violation of due process and the right to privacy, a right that is not stated in any clause in the U.S. Constitution, but rather is based on what the court called emanations or peripheral implications from other clauses. And, that decision has been criticized not only by folks on the pro-life side of this difference here, but by many persons who profess to be in favor of choice, as they call it, or a woman's right to an abortion because of a faulty reasoning. And interestingly, a book was recently published called What Roe versus Wade Should Have Said. And in that book, a number of advocates of abortion try and put the decision on firmer constitutional ground.
Tom, one of the biggest misnomers I think out there is in the community, and by the way, we're taking your phone calls at 312-751-1979, is that I think if you talk to many people, and public opinion polls seem to think that abortion is one of those procedures where it's allowed in the first, people seem to understand the term trimester, dividing the 9 months into three
yes.
sections, but there seems to be a perception out there, well, it's only legal for a certain period of time, and that, well, it's not legal in the second and third trimesters. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and where the perception comes from?
Well, the perception comes from this invention of really an artificial distinction that pregnancy is divided into these three parts, the tripartite division, first trimester, second trimester, third trimester. And Justice Blackmun, who wrote the Roe decision, talked about these three parts of a pregnancy, and there are different regulations under the Roe decision for each of these three parts of a woman's pregnancy. Now, somehow people got the idea, and it's been circulated often in the press and elsewhere, that abortion in the United States is only legal in the first trimester. And that's simply not true. It's legal all the way up to the moment of birth, and it's simply a matter, and this was the Doe v. Bolton case ruling, this is a companion case to Roe, that in a physician's opinion, if a woman's health requires an abortion as late as the moment of birth, that would be legal and constitutionally required.
And this has led to the termination of, I forgot the numbers of every year, but it's in the millions, and I think there's been statistics indicated that it's in the tens of millions now since the adjudication of this case back in 1973.
Absolutely.
And I know there's been other cases subsequently litigated, the cases in Pennsylvania, the Planned Parenthood versus Casey case back in 1992, which does give the states a little bit more authority to regulate some of the procedures as it relates to the abortion decision. And I think what we saw perhaps over the weekend was a decision by the Attorney General in the state of Illinois to help enact one of those curbs that's being put on by the various states throughout the country. We're going to take a quick break here at 10 after the hour. It's 9:09 a.m. in Chicago. We're being joined this morning by Tom Brekka from the Thomas More Society. We're looking for your calls and your input. We'll be joined in a minute by Mary Louise Curry, and later on in the program, we'll also have Richard Dorflinger from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops to talk a little bit about what's going on in the congressional level with this issue. It's March for Life. It's January 22nd, the 34th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Jim Legault, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My kid isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 19 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Most elementary schools will have open houses during Catholic Schools Week, beginning January 28th. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools for more information. Choose a Catholic education. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Gilligan, the director of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. I'm with Jim Legault, the chancellor and former director of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about some of the issues pertaining to the March for Life that's currently going on in Washington, D.C. There's a big, big, big rally today throughout the streets of Washington and a rally at the Capitol. The number for to join our conversation is area code 312-751-1979, and we're on the line with Tom Brekka, who is with the Thomas More Society. And before the break, Tom was talking a little bit about the Roe v. Wade cases and the Doe v. Bolton case. And if people didn't see it, if they were busy over the weekend, the headlines, I think, of both of the major Chicago papers, both the Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune, had a story about the Attorney General's actions as it relates to legislation that was passed in 1995. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that development is?
Well, yes, Bob, it's a wonderful, favorable development, at least up to a certain point. As you know, on behalf of the Catholic Conference and a lot of other pro-life organizations in Illinois, Lutherans for Life, the Illinois Right to Life Committee, and Illinois Citizens for Life, and other groups, we petitioned the Illinois Supreme Court justices back in the end of the summer, asking them to please issue some rules, procedural rules, to allow for bypass hearings for parental notification. There was a law passed over a decade ago in Illinois, signed into law by the governor, Jim Edgar, at the time, which required parental notice before a minor woman, a young woman, would go for an abortion. And this was held unconstitutional by our federal district court in Chicago only because there were not procedural rules in our Illinois court system to allow exceptions in those, you know, few cases where there had been a family problem with either violence or incest, or where the minor could convince a judge that she was mature enough and it was in her best interest not to have her one parent notified. And we're very happy to say, and I should add that Joe Burkett, the state's attorney at DuPage County, had kind of led the way on this, blazed the trail earlier in the summer, and our effort was supporting his initial effort to get the court to do this. And within a week, very happily, the court, the justices issued those rules. So all that remained was for the Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, to go into federal court and get that injunction lifted. And we were frustrated by several months' delay, but the Attorney General has advised us that she was conducting a statewide investigation to make sure the courts were prepared to implement this procedural rule. And now, just Friday, on Roe v. Wade weekend, the March for Life weekend, she announced that she was going to go into court. The only problem is that she said that she was going to have to conduct, she wanted a special master appointed to mm-hmm. conduct the same study that, frankly, it seemed to us that she'd been conducting all along to make sure that the courts were ready to implement this law.
So in a fairly short period of time, the state of Illinois should have a parental notification law that will be in effect and will be hopefully abided by. So that is a big win. It's only taken, what, since 1995? I can't do the math off the top of my head, but that's a long time ago. It's 11
years.
That's
a long time ago,
right.
And but you know, sometimes those rules weren't issued.
Yeah, and I should add Bob Thomas also, the Chief Justice, had a little bit to do with that as well. Tom, can you hold on just a second here? We have another phone caller on the line here. I think it's Peter from Stickney. Peter, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Yes.
You have a question?
Well, I just have an observation to make. I'm a deacon, and I preached. I preached yesterday, and I said this whole thing started with a lie. Norma McCorvey lied. She has since recanted, and she wants Roe overturned. And that should give us, hopefully that should give us hope that we will wake up and once more restore the right to life to unborn children. I mean, a lot of people, they just think, well, it's the law of the land, what can I do about it? You can do plenty about it. And the first thing you can do is pray. We can all pray. And but I just wanted to point that out, that people don't realize Sarah Weddington knew she lied, and she took this case to the Supreme Court anyway. But and that's one of the things that we have to contend with. And I want to thank Tom for the great work he does with the Thomas More Society.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thanks for your call.
Okay, you're welcome.
We're taking other calls at 312-751-1979. Tom, do you want to make a comment at all about the other case that's currently pending before the court, which is, I think they heard oral arguments back in the fall with regard to the partial birth abortion case, and I think a lot of people are looking at the new appointees, the Chief Justice, Judge Roberts, and Judge Alito, who recently was appointed to the court. You want to make a comment at all about that? Any?
Well, sure. Just very quickly, Bob. I mean, there are two cases. They were argued the same day. They involve this what's called partial birth abortion. This one technique of abortion that is very, very grisly, and involves an intact delivery up to a certain point, and then action to terminate the life of the fetus, which of course means baby, and it, frankly, we're very hopeful, but you know, we'll find out. That decision may be coming down, you know, this month, next month, or any time through the end of June. We hope that the banning of that procedure will be upheld. Just a few years ago, and another test of that, a ban of that law, the court ruled 5-4 upholding or striking down the law as unconstitutional. So we're hoping that with these new justices on the court, that the result, and with a different federal statute now that's at stake, that the result will be different.
So the court, the ruling may not come down. There's no time that we can say that the court will rule.
No, there's no schedule, and sometimes it's amazingly quick. Other times it takes a long delay. You know, the justices exchange drafts of opinions. There's a lot of back and forth debate between chambers, revising language. Uh-huh. Adding qualifications, you know, and even if, you know, sometimes when you lose a case, it mm-hmm. can still be positive if things are said in the opinion that pave the way for future legal developments.
Mm-hmm. Tom, this is Jimmy.
Yes, Jimmy.
It's good to hear you again, and I know we've worked well over the years. I was down in Springfield starting in 76, and it was, you know, pretty soon after Roe v. Wade and the Dalton case, and there was some euphoria. I remember around a constitutional amendment, and states were passing laws, and there was not a lot of precedent set at the Supreme Court level. And it seemed that the decision was made at the time that to go the legislative route. And, you know, there's been some criticisms by over the years about, you know, maybe a broader communication strategy, more winning the minds and hearts. One of the really positive things that I've noticed over the 20, 30 years that I've been involved in this is the fact that these crowds seem to be getting bigger and bigger. The level of commitment seems to be deeper. And I'm really happy to see that the acknowledgement now by the media and others that there really is a deep and solid strain that runs through our society now that's committed to overturning these, if possible, and certainly deepening the legislative and judicial underpinnings for respecting life. And so I was really happy. I know you've been involved throughout these 30 years, but I see some definite developments along these lines.
Jim, I agree with you 100%. I think that it's not a matter of turning the clock back here to the way things were before Roe. I think we're really building a whole new recognition throughout society of the mystery of the beginning of life and a new, more profound, if I can use that that word, respect for this the beauty of this process by which new life is brought into the world. You know, we now have windows to the womb that we didn't have before. We've got ultrasound machines here at the March for Life convention. There's an exhibit with four-dimensional color photos, movies of the baby in the womb from almost from the very beginning. And you know, in the old days, they used to call the unborn child, at least the opposition did, a blob of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
They used all these euphemisms to dehumanize the fetus. They used the word fetus, and of course that's Latin, and it translates, means little one or baby. We wouldn't say baby unless we were referring to a baby that someone wanted and would eventually be born. I remember one of the candidates for president who was very pro-abortion, but referring to his new grandchild, and yet it was an unborn, and yet it wasn't born yet, but he called it a baby and said they were expecting it, but...
And I think, and this is perhaps one of the issues where maybe technology is helping us a little bit. You know, the sonogram, its ability to show the pictures really kind of proves what we've been saying for the last 30 some odd years. We're on the line with Tom Brekka, and Tom, we're going to take a quick break here. It's 22 after the hour. The phone number is 312-751-1979. And I'm told when we come back, Mary Louise Curry will be on the line briefly to give us an update from what's going on the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Jimmy Legault. We'll be back after this brief message.
Here's an invitation for men in the Archdiocese of Chicago to attend Ministry Weekends at Mundelein Seminary, retreats designed to help men discern God's call to the priesthood. I'm Father Joe Noonan, the Vocation Director for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Ministry Weekends feature presentations about diocesan priesthood, prayer, and discussion, all aimed at reaching a better understanding of God's movement in your life. For more information about these free retreats, call me, Father Joe Noonan, at 847-970-4845 or visit our website www.chicagopriest.org. I look forward to meeting you at our next ministry weekend, Friday, April 20th through Sunday, April 22nd.
Hi, I'm Chuck Knapp. Join me for Searching the Word, a live interactive program that equips you with a firm understanding of the faith. Each day, we'll search the Bible, the Catechism, papal teaching, and historical writings for answers to questions about living Catholic life. That's Searching the Word every weekday on Relevant Radio.
That's Searching the Word with Chuck Neff, weekdays at noon on Chicagoland's Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
Get ready for Parish Leadership Day 2007. The date is Saturday, February 17th at Maria High School on Chicago's South Side. Call to Serve, Co-workers in the Vineyard will feature workshops, training tips, inspirational speakers, and even a question and answer luncheon with Cardinal George. Go to www.archchicago.org to learn more about this terrific event for everybody involved in leading our wonderful parishes. See you Saturday, February 17th for Parish Leadership Day.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Gilligan with Jimmy Legault. The number is 312-751-1979. And we're on the line once again with Tom Brekka, talking a little bit about the legal implications of the things that have happened in the courts with regard to the life issue, the March for Life. And I'm told that we're going to give an update now. I feel like I'm reporting live. Is Mary Louise Curry, who is at the March for Life, and I believe she's somewhere in the Verizon Center. Mary Louise, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am, Bob. Hi, Jimmy. Great to talk with you guys.
Great to have you on the line.
Hi, Mary Louise.
This is the All Washington show today. We have everybody coming in from Washington. And Mary Louise, Tom Brekka is on the other line, and Richard Dorfling is going to be joining us in a minute. Mary Louise, could you give us a little bit of an update on what it's like? Describe to us what it's like to be there.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, we're in the Verizon Center, and the place is absolutely filled. There's not an empty seat, and we're having this enormous rally for life, and actually we just began Mass here, and it's amazing because, you know, apparently the capacity is 22,000-something. One of the guards here was just telling me there isn't an empty seat in the place, and the energy of the teams who are here, I mean, this place is almost entirely, I'd say, 95% are teens, and it's just so exciting to be here and to feel the energy and the hope and the conviction of these young people here to speak out for life.
Jimmy was just making a comment before you joined us about the change in the attitude over time and about how it seems that more younger people are involved now and how we're trying to build more of an advocacy in terms of converting hearts and minds than perhaps we did maybe 30 years ago. And I think your work is leading a lot to that. Now, the Mass is going on right now, and I believe Cardinal George is there as well.
That's right. In fact, they introduced about 50 bishops, and
wow,
each group would kind of, you know, cheer. And, of course, Cardinal George was the first one that was introduced. He outranked everybody else here, including the main celebrant, Archbishop Worrell of Washington, D.C. So Cardinal George was introduced first, and it was exciting to have our group of 200-some stand up and cheer really loud and hold up our Archdiocese of Chicago Pardon Me Pro-Life banner. You know, the teens love doing that and stuff. So it was great. It's really... And they just love him. We had a private gathering with him and Father Frank Pavone yesterday at the John Paul II Cultural Center, and the Mundelein Seminarians joined us for that. And it was such a really fun, enjoyable forum. And the kids also learned so much about their faith and about life issues and got to really get to know the Cardinal and have their pictures with him. And it's just been a really special experience for
Mary
them.
Louise, Jimmy, what do you think the teens take back with them after this sort of, a very intense two-day event? I mean, what are we asking them to do when they get back, and what kinds of things do you think teens can bring back to them that perhaps some of us older, saltier types...
some are older and saltier than others.
Yeah.
Well, one thing is that they have proximity to the people making choices today for life or against life, really, because when we look at, where most of the ages of abortions take place, it's teen or primarily college age. So what we're doing is we're really preparing these young people to, you know, be pro-life all their lives, to do pro-life ministry, but also to speak to their friends and know that if there is somebody, you know, God forbid, who finds themselves in the situation of an ill-timed pregnancy and is considering abortion, they can personally know what to do to direct that person away from that and to make a loving decision for their baby and for themselves.
Well, if anybody could, not that anybody would, but question your commitment to this issue, Mary Louise, just a testament to the mode of transportation you took to get there is sufficient. How many people came back? How many busloads of people approximately are there?
Well, we sent 5 buses. So
okay.
We have 4 buses of teens, and they're here with us. And our exact count is like 205. And then we have a bus of college students, and they are actually doing meetings this morning with the offices of Senator Durbin and Senator Obama. So they last year I accompanied them to those meetings, but this year Father Paul Stein will be with them and some other folks. So I'm able to hold down the fort here with the teens a little bit more. So we had 48 college students from, I think, 9 different universities, and then teens from parishes and high schools all over the Archdiocese. So it's really been exciting. So I think we had 253 total with our buses. And then we've run into a lot of people from Chicago who
right. Just came on their own.
Yeah, they didn't want to brave the 14-hour bus ride.
I wonder why. But and I know the other dioceses are participating as well, so it's just not the Archdiocese. It's all throughout the state.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, we ran into the Springfield Diocese last night, and they've got quite a large group here, too, of primarily teens. So, yeah, it's great to see. I think Rockford sent a bus. So it's great to see the other dioceses represented as well, and dioceses all over the country. You know, it's you know, all the groups have their banners here, and it's, you know, the Rally for Life before this Mass, I mean, was really exciting. And to give you an idea, I mean, we got here at 8 a.m. The Mass starts at 10, and we're sitting on the second level toward the back. I mean, the place is just packed, and people are so excited, and, you know, it's really wonderful to see this. You just come back so motivated to make a difference and with great hope.
That's terrific. And we also have a brief inquiry about how the photographer Brian is holding up.
Brian's doing great. Good. He was absolutely exhausted last night. It's really
been
a tiring trip. But this morning he's great. In fact, I should tell you that, you know, we named our buses after different pro-life heroes, and Brian happened to be on the bus named after Cardinal George. And so we had an activity where each bus had to make up a song or a cheer about the person they were named after. And Brian, I understand, is the one who wrote the song, and then we performed them for Cardinal George yesterday at the JP2 Cultural Center in the gathering with Father Frank. And he, like, I think, loved the song. Because, among other things, there's a part where it says, "George rules." So he got up and he said, "Tell everybody back home that George ruled." Something was really funny.
Little known talents from the photographer Brian. Mary Louise, thanks so much for taking a couple minutes to join us. I know you have a hectic schedule with trying to accompany all those people who are with you. So our thanks for joining us on this morning show. And we're going to take a quick break here. It's 9:31 a.m. in Chicago, and we're talking about the March for Life and some of the issues related to it. We've been talking with Tom Brekka, who's still on the line. That was Mary Louise Curry from the Archdiocese. And when we come back, we'll have Richard Dorflinger from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Washington with related pro-life issues. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Jim Legault. The number here is 312-751-1979.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
As winter sets in, Catholic Charities seeks help for the homeless. I'm Father Mike Boland, the administrator of Catholic Charities for the Archdiocese, and I invite you to join us in our efforts to clothe and feed the poor. Catholic Charities is in need of warm items in our clothing rooms. We are collecting coats, gloves, hats, blankets, and sleeping bags for the homeless. Donations can be dropped off at our emergency assistance office at 721 North LaSalle, or you can visit our website at www.catholiccharities.net. Help Catholic Charities provide a little warmth this winter.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio, 820 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with Jim Legault, co-host today, talking about the March for Life and some of the issues that pertain to this issue. That makes sense, right? 312-751-1979. And I believe we have Richard Dorflinger on our line from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Richard, are you on the line? Hello, Richard. He is on the line. He's off the line. He is there.
Here I am.
Here he is. I knew his third time was a charm. Richard, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Richard, I'm joined here with Jim Legault, who I this is the present director and past director show here in Chicago today. Welcome.
Very good. Thank you.
Richard, we're talking about some of the issues, you know, the March for Life today that is going on all over your city, and Richard is in Washington, D.C. Richard, can you just tell us a little bit about the new Congress that was elected back in November? I know there's a lot of people out there. The Democrats now have the majority in the House and in the Senate, and how this affects life issues, because it's really kind of unknown at this point in time. So if you could just kind of give us a rundown on the new Congress and maybe some of the issues that we're going to be dealing with in the next 2 years as pertains to life issues.
Okay, well, of course, the major issues in the elections that probably determined the outcome of who is running Congress were not pro-life issues in the sense of abortion and embryo research and so on, but nonetheless, there was some impact on that, but not as much as you might think from the change of parties, because I guess in the House, the Republican Party lost about 30 votes, I would say, on most pro-life legislation. There may have been a drop of 15 or so votes. And you can't necessarily predict by party, of course, how someone's going to vote. In this first pro-life vote of the 110th Congress, there was a vote on embryonic stem cell research, and four of the new Democratic members voted against the bill to fund stem cell research that relies on destroying embryos. They're pro-life Democrats. In the Senate, there might be a change of several votes, and though again, some pro-life Republicans like Rick Santorum were replaced by pro-life Democrat Senator Casey, who ran as a pro-life Democrat. He says he'll vote against the embryonic stem cell bill at all. So I think it's important to realize that while the parties have crossed over in terms of who's running the procedure, we need to address our efforts at everybody of both parties and hope that they will take our good arguments to heart.
And I think that's a good point, is that we need to direct our arguments to both parties, and especially now with the change in parties, it's always foolish to put your hopes just into thinking one party is going to be the answer to resolving this issue or us advancing our cause at all. The number is 312-751-1979. We have Richard Dorflinger on the line for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and also Tom Brekka is still on the line from the Thomas More Society. And I believe we have a caller online, Karen from Park Forest. Karen, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm speaking as the sister of a man living with autism. I have 2 points to make. Number one, 98% of Down's babies are killed by abortion. Again, a sister with of a man with autism, I can certainly understand why. We wrote off the entire area west of I-57 because of housing discrimination. My brother was unable to get an invitation to God's table until he was 57 years old. You have to provide some alternatives to abortion, unless the pro-life movement is mainly concerned with middle-class teenagers. Second point, you just ran an ad for Catholic schools, which spurned my call, bragging about your test scores. Naturally, there are few, if any, of our children in Catholic schools. Again, when my mother took Richard to church for the sacraments, she was told very snippily that, oh, he can't learn. So he had to wait 50 years before he can join us at God's table.
Okay.
I have never gotten a reason why Richard was delayed in receiving Jesus and Holy Communion. Why he had to wait so long. The only thing I can think of is discrimination. And the discrimination that occurs against the disabled, particularly the retarded, is the reason that almost all of the Downs babies are killed.
Karen,
and they're looking for the gene that causes autism, so maybe they can do that with those kids, too.
Certainly. And, Karen, thanks for your call, and thanks for your comments. In no way are we trying to discriminate unjustly. And I don't know. Richard, do you have a comment at all to Karen?
Well, just talking a little bit about the debate on federal policy, which is what I'm mainly connected with, but a lot of the question related to how the Catholic Church and how dioceses treat the disabled and don't do enough. And I think that's true. We can always do more. There's one bill that seemed to be a consensus bill in the last Congress, and I hope it'll get more attention in this one, that was co-sponsored by an unusual combination of, two Catholics, but a very different perspective, Senator Sam Brownback and Senator Ted Kennedy, to provide more positive news to parents who get a diagnosis that they may be about to have a child with Down syndrome, and connect them up with the supportive services and the peer support from other parents who have been through this, and services that can help them and their child. And I'm hoping that will come forward this year. In fact, that legislation is part of a package that Representative Lincoln Davis and others were promoting last year. We hope will be back. It's a support for pregnant women bill to do a great number of things to provide positive support for women who might be facing an abortion decision. But I think it is also true that the church is and its institutions have not been without fault sometimes in really having the outreach to people with disabilities that we need to have. And as a pro-life community, that needs to be very much a priority.
And I'm also reminded of a story that I saw, I think it was over the weekend, in the newspaper. It was in the Metro section about a woman from Hoffman Estates who has founded a not-for-profit organization to reach out to parents who have children with Down syndrome or have tests indicating that they may have Down syndrome, and encouraging them to not abort those children and to have them, keep them to term because of the valuable aspects that they've made, and not only in her life, but she says in many others as well. We have to take a quick break. It's 9:42 a.m. We have a couple other callers on the line. The phone number is 312-751-1979. We're talking with Richard Dorflinger, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and with Tom Brekka from the Thomas More Society. And today is January 22nd, which is the anniversary of the March for Life. We'll be back after this brief message.
Get ready for Parish Leadership Day 2007, the date is Saturday, February 17th at Maria High School on Chicago's South Side. Call to Serve, co-workers in the Vineyard, will feature workshops, training tips, inspirational speakers, and even a question and answer luncheon with Cardinal George. Go to www.archchicago.org to learn more about this terrific event for everybody involved in leading our wonderful parishes. See you Saturday, February 17th for Parish Leadership Day.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're invited to watch
The Church, the Cardinal, and You, this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Catholic school students write about immigration's positive influence on our country. Worshippers praise the Mother of God at Our Lady of Guadalupe ceremonies. And a stately chapel in Mundelein is an architectural treasure chest of our Catholic faith.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your Archdiocese.
This is Bob Gilligan. I'm back with Jim Legault, my co-host, and Tom Brecka from the Thomas More Society, as well as Richard Dorflinger from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And before we go to the next question, I want to just ask Richard in a minute. Jim, you want to say something about the last caller?
I just wanted to point out, I agree with the point that Richard made about perhaps coming late to this, and also there's a lot more that we could do. But there are a couple of ministries that have been working in this area in the Archdiocese. There's one called the Special Religious Education Ministry, spread by Father Jim McCarthy, and he's been working at trying to deal with parishes to make them more accessible, and Pathways, which is a secular organization in Chicago that we work with very strongly, that does provide some funding, and it's a ministry and a mission, I think, on both counts, to try to make our churches, both in terms of the worship and in terms of the physical environment, more accessible to those, not only with physical, but also with developmental disabilities as well. So.
Great. And I hope Karen's still listening out there. Richard, we got about 5 minutes, and I know you have to leave in a few. How about some of the other issues that you think are going to be coming down into the public policy discussion in the next, I don't know, six months to the next election?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's already been a bill introduced that we're very concerned about that would require every hospital in the country that receives federal funds to basically to recite a certain script about the wonders and the benefits of emergency contraception, and then to give it out on request. It's designed as a bill to help rape victims. The definition of rape, though, includes statutory rape, so what it means is this is a way of getting around the FDA's approval of emergency contraception that said we don't know that this is safe for minors yet, so it'll just be for people 18 and over. Now any teenager would get emergency contraception because sex with a teenager was statutory rape. So this is a threat to Catholic hospitals and their consciences, and also to the health of young people. There are also two bills out there, or about to be out there, that will both be billed as pro-life democratic bills, mm-hmm. or ways to reduce abortions. One of them, we hope to be actively supporting, is introduced by Lincoln Davis. It's the one I mentioned earlier that includes one section on helping parents who may have a handicapped child. And it has some wonderful things in there for support for families, for women facing an unintended pregnancy. But there's a different bill that we expect to come forward. It was out there last year but didn't go anywhere then. And that would be something that has some of the same services but is really packed with all kinds of mandates for contraception and emergency contraception, saying that sex education programs that are funded by the federal government are not allowed to teach abstinence unless they teach contraception as well. And it's all an effort, without sort of mentioning the word abortion, to put the control of programs for our young people on these neuralgic issues into the hands of groups like Planned Parenthood. So we expect to have some very tough debates about those things, as well as about the straightforward legislation about destroying embryos for their stem cells and about abortion itself.
And I think we're going to have maybe some of those similar issues on the state level here in Illinois and probably the other states as well. And Richard, I understand you have to leave us, and you're probably off to another activity, which is going to be a hectic day today in Washington.
Yes, at some point I have to get down to the March for Life myself.
Absolutely. Well, we don't want to keep you any further. Richard, I just want to take the opportunity to thank you for not only joining us on the air today, but for your help in the past and all the assistance you offer to all the states throughout the country in monitoring the legislation. We have Tom Brekka still on the line. We're going to wrap up the final 10 minutes of our program here with continuing the conversation, and the number is 312-751-1979, and we'll be back after this brief message.
From the moment you see the dramatic cover photo of an angel atop a church watching over the city of Chicago, you know you're about to enjoy a very special book. The Archdiocese of Chicago, A Journey of Faith, is a treasure chest of photographs, paintings, and historic perspective. Every church in the Archdiocese of Chicago is featured. The book provides readers with insight into our Catholic heritage, ministry, evolution, and challenges. A Journey of Faith makes a great gift with more than 340 pages of photos and history printed on gloss paper, hardcover, color throughout. It is available at many parishes, or you can call Liturgy Training Publications at 1-800-933-1800 or order online at ltp.org. So call 1-800-933-1800 or go to ltp.org. The Archdiocese of Chicago, A Journey of Faith. Display it proudly in your home.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My kid isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 19 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Most elementary schools will have open houses during Catholic Schools Week beginning January 28th. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools for more information. Choose a Catholic education. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Gilligan and Jim Legault talking about the March for Life that's going on today, January 22nd, the 34th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision that came back down in 1973. We have another phone call on the line. I think we have Genevieve. Are you there?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. I want to make a slight reference to Sharon's comments. I think we must realize that the Catholic schools are operating only on voluntary support. We do not have operating expenses paid by the federal government. I'm sure otherwise all these cases would be accepted and handled charitably. But my main comment is that earlier in the program, you said there's a perception that abortion is allowed only up to the first 3 months. I think there's some kind of a perception that people believe there are no cases where valid reasons for abortion can be given. Isn't it possible that even if Roe versus Wade is canceled out, that people will be able to have an abortion for certain reasons, physical?
Certainly, and I think that's always the possibility that, but I think right now what we're talking about is the Roe v. Wade case.
Right.
And
but I think you would get more general support because I think some people think you will never have any abortions, you know?
Tom could answer this question. My sense is that what Roe v. Wade did was create a right within the U.S. Constitution. If that goes away, states for many years, even before the Roe v. Wade, had Texas and Alabama and I think Georgia and many states had gone and develop their own series of legislative solutions to it. So I think in some ways that's the argument, is that many of these decisions ought to be left back to state legislatures who more accurately reflect their local populations. Tom?
Well, exactly, Jim. The Roe versus Wade and later Pennsylvania versus Casey, which was a case in the early 90s that altered the Roe v. Wade rules, you know, were based on the federal constitutional law, and if Roe were repealed, the matter would go back to the states, and frankly, there have been a lot of developments in the state legislatures and in the state courts, and many of them have provided that there are constitutional rights anchored in state constitutions for abortion under various circumstances. But, you know, why would abortion be necessary in any case unless to save the life of the mother? Why take one life for any reason less than that? And, you know, medical authorities now tell us that the life of the mother would hardly ever be in this jeopardy given now modern medicine. So I don't understand the lady saying that there's something wrong with the fact that abortion would be so limited.
The I think what she was trying to state was just what you were trying to articulate, which is that if Roe v. Wade were ever overturned, the issue goes back to the states, and you're going to see states take a wide variety of approaches to that. But I think part of the frustration of this whole issue is what we were alluding to earlier, is sort of that pent-up frustration that when the courts, if you will, sort of took this issue off the table, it gives those people who have objections to this procedure really no outlet, and it's very frustrating in terms of our advocating public policy change when the courts have sort of taken the issue right off the table and they've just said, well, this can't be discussed in the realm of a democratic society.
Well, exactly, Bob. The thinking was back in 1973 that the court's ruling in Roe v. Wade would settle this controversy once and forever. And
right.
Of course, what it did was ignite a firestorm. It's a firestorm that's been raging now for all these years since. And it's good that people discuss these issues, and that's kind of what I was adverting to earlier about mm-hmm. a new recognition of the importance and the beauty of the life process.
Right.
You know, the fact that we're talking about it, I think, makes people focus on this. And I think that's why young people especially are coming over to the pro-life side in greater numbers than ever before.
Tom, we have about 3 minutes left in the remaining couple of minutes we have. Speculate what you think will happen with the Supreme Court. Do you see much hope in terms of, you know, there's a lot of people that say it's 5-4 right now, 5-3. I suppose the partial birth abortion decision will give us a little bit of indication on where the court's going. But do you have any sense of that?
Well, I do. I think, Bob, that the real challenge is not looking for a massive change mandated from on high from the Supreme Court. I think that, obviously, the appointment of new justices and their confirmation will affect the outcome of these cases. Chief Justice John Roberts is a real scholar. You know, his wife served for many years as the General Counsel of Feminists for Life of America,
All right. Mm-hmm.
a pro-life group. Interestingly, five out of the nine Supreme Court justices are now Catholics,
mm-hmm.
And how they manifest their faith and their work obviously varies. To me, the real challenge is to work not only in the courts and look for legal solutions, but I think the real challenge is at street level. I think that the more on a person-to-person basis people increasingly understand, you know, what's going on in terms of prenatal life and how important, how human that life is, and mm-hmm. it's not a blob of tissue.
Right.
I think that they'll be building a greater and greater consensus in the country, and not only in elections or in court decisions, but just in our outlook, I think.
That's absolutely.
That'll bring
yeah.
out a big
Jim,
change.
You want to chime in?
Just one of the comments I want to make about an earlier comment being that this is a matter for, you know, middle class you know, high schoolers. There's a deep strain of respect for life that runs through the minority communities, the African-American community, the Hispanic community, about, you know, if vulnerable life being attacked, vulnerable life being... And so I've seen just the opposite. I've seen this run through many of the parishes and communities that I've been part of and worked with, where there's a great deal of respect for unborn life among African-Americans, Hispanics, and other minority communities.
Public opinion polls would validate that as well, if you see the statistics on where people are on the pro-life issue in the African-American community and the Hispanic community both, that they're very high in support of life. We got to sign off. Before I do so, I would be remiss if I did not thank Tom Brekka. Tom, thanks so much for taking a couple minutes out of your day to join us from Washington. I believe you're in the hotel room, so... I know that can create a bit of a discomfort, so thanks so much for joining us.
And your whole life commitment, Tom.
Yeah, not only today, but in the past as well. And Mary Louise Curry and Richard Dorflinger for joining us. And thanks to my co-host, Jim Legault, who joined me here for the whole hour. And we'll be back on the third Monday of February with another public policy topic. This is Bob Gilligan. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to talking to you further. Thanks, bye.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 820 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.